Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The dream is made real. Ricky Hatton rocks the world.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
It's over. Mamma mia, he's done it. Anthony Joshua defeats Vladimir Klitschko.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Welcome back to BTR Boxing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sean, joined as always by Jamie for this week's big fight preview. It's Canelo versus Jaime Munguia, a great fight in the super middleweight division. Really looking forward to this. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that are not really that over-enthusiastic about the prospect of this fight. But of course, me and Jamie, we will discuss our thoughts and feelings on this fight and how we think it will play out. The strengths and weaknesses, of course, of both fighters' predictions, which are not really anything to go by if historical episodes are anything to talk about. But this is a good opportunity for us to talk about a great fight that we seemingly think that others, and we've heard other people talking about this fight in a quite negative light. So I'm interested to sort of explore the points and the topics regarding what negativity is around this fight. But before we get into it, Jamie, before we go anywhere further on this episode, ladies and gentlemen, I do want to say a big thank you to everybody for commenting on last week's reaction show when we were talking about Ryan Garcia beating Devin Haney. It was a much longer episode than what the Big Fight Reaction Show is accustomed to, and we like to go off on a little bit of a tangent. We had a good few comments, and I'm going to mention them now because I want to continue to see that from everybody. So we had one from Victor Jorgensen on Spotify who says, "I'm still loving the show. It's my favourite boxing pod. 4 stars. We had one from Peter that said, "Star." Well, it's just an emoji star. And then we had one from David, which was really good feedback for us. So I appreciate this, David. And what you said was, "Would love to hear more about the fight inside the ring rather than the events that surrounded the fight outside of the ring. Really enjoying the pod though." So good feedback from yourself. And on Patreon, we had feedback from Corey, who is an absolute fantastic guy. Corey, so much appreciated when you put these comments forward. He said, "Good stuff. It went by surprisingly fast today." And he also mentioned that the last episode, as in that reaction show, was one of his favourite ones that wasn't a career profile or a darker side of boxing. So that in itself, those comments that I've highlighted in particular, I really appreciated. And I want to encourage people to do exactly the same week upon week, because it really, really does help. It helps us to understand what you want out of what we're doing. It helps us to understand what feedback we're getting from yourselves. So we really appreciate that. Jamie, just going to hand it over to you, give you an opportunity to share your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I want to say thank you because, again, we've spent a hell of a lot of time imploring you to leave messages, you know, constructive feedback. So it's nice that you're listening far in enough to the pod. You're obviously getting something from the pod and listening far enough in that you can hear
me and Sean are peeling through. What I will ask, and this is a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I'm going to ask you here, Sean, how many stars? Is it a five-star rating system?
It is on Apple, yeah.
Right, okay. So, Mr. Jorgensen, I'd like you to leave another comment and explain to me why you didn't put five stars if we're your favourite boxing pod and you only put four. What are we What are we doing wrong? I don't want to get at you. And I appreciate the feedback, but come on, five stars. We need it. If we're not tickling your pickle in some way, let us know and we can certainly, you know, change tact. We can move forward. If that was an oversight and I'm talking bollocks, just, yeah, I'm sorry. But that's all I want to say. And also, I would mention to Corey as well, special mention to Corey, because I know he's been on board way beyond my time on the pod. And yeah, he's a common name that pops up. So I really want to sort of say thank you to Corey for his support, particularly as well because, you know, this is a Manchester, well, it's not a Manchester boxing podcast because we don't purely focus on Manchester boxing, but, you know, you could be mistaken for thinking it's an English one. So to have an American on board and then being a loyal supporter as you are, thank you. You know, it's really good to see that our reach is extending across the Atlantic. And we're having such a big impression on you. Really means a lot. And I'm getting into these shows a lot more. You know, we've touched upon it on previous pods. And now, you know, some weeks me and Sean weren't really getting up for it. But now, these past couple of weeks, and I think it's showing in our delivery, in the way we are, we're getting a bit animated. We've had feedback, maybe rein in a little bit, make it a bit more fire heavy in certain situations. Well, you can really, I've listened back myself and it's something I wouldn't normally do. But I can hear the passion in my voice and I love the way it's going. So I'm just really glad that you are getting something out of it as well. If there are people out there that aren't getting much out of it, again, I'm going to, you know, sit here and appeal to you. Let us know. Let us know what we're doing wrong. I know I like to swear. I fucking swear as much as I want until you turn around and tell me that it's a bad thing. So, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Jamie, for that impassioned speech about that as well. It's really good to get your feedback and your perspective on it because we've not really discussed this outside of the pod, so it was good for you to really put this into this episode. So, guys, we'll now get to the business at hand. We're 5 minutes into the pod. Let's actually talk about what we're here to talk about this week, which is Canelo versus Jaime Munguia. A fight, as I've said at the start of the show, that seems to be getting a little bit of negativity around most fans and pundits and people within the sport around social media don't really seem to be buying into the fight. And of course, I understand why, because it's not David Benavidez. And that's what everybody wanted to see. You know, we've all banged on about it for a while. We wanted to see the Benavidez fight. But if I'm being totally honest with you guys, I think this is a much better fight than the proposed fight against Jermell Charlo. I didn't want to see Jermell Charlo and Canelo. I didn't want to see him fight the other Charlo brother. When that was put around social media, rumours circulated that that was going to happen, I just rolled my eyes, shook my head, probably said some expletives around the time that I was going around and just thought, this is just ridiculous. But now I'm actually quite happy that we're getting this fight because I think this is a good fight. You've got a Mexican versus a Mexican. Jaime Munguia, 43-0. This is the biggest test of his career. This is the one that I think he's needed for some time. His last performance against John Ryder, against the mutual opponent of Canelo's this year, I think was really good for Jaime Munguia to really put that statement on that bout and show that he is ready for the big time. His previous bout against Derevyanchenko, some might argue, was a difficult bout for him. Some might argue that Derevyanchenko should have potentially had more of a say in that fight, but I still think it was a good win for him. John Ryder was a good win for him. Them two fights in the past 12 months have been the ones that have made me feel like maybe he's actually progressing his career now. He's got this fight with Canelo, Jamie, and this is the biggest test of his career. He's not going to take a backward step. Looking at how he's handled his fights so far, he doesn't really like to take backward steps, although he does leave himself very vulnerable in the ring. And that's something where you'd expect Canelo to maybe exploit that. I wouldn't say inexperience, but some might say it is because of the fights at a high level. So before we talk about Canelo, let's focus on Munguia. And Jamie, I just want to hear your thoughts on Jaime Munguia. And obviously his last couple of fights, him stepping up to the plate and fighting Canelo, and what your thoughts initially are on what type of a performance he needs to put in here.
I think he just needs to do what a Mexican does and just go in head first, particularly because you're fighting against a very, very capable counterpuncher. And you touched upon it there. You know, he leaves himself vulnerable, Jaime Munguia. I don't think he called him Jamie there. Jaime Munguia, he leaves himself vulnerable because he is a million miles an hour. You know, he's not really focusing on his defence, is he? He's just bang, 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 thank you, ma'am. And that's all right against the John Ryders of the world who maybe, and not to sort of put down John Ryder, but he's not the biggest puncher in the world. So you can get away with it a little bit. You know, you can exploit that weakness in John Ryder. You can just keep going forward. And when you know that there's not much coming back towards you, you can just keep going, perpetual motion. I think where, you know, the weakness is, I don't think he's going to be able to walk down Canelo the same way that he's walked down certain opponents like he did at times against Debrianchenko, and he certainly did against John Ryder. He's going to be facing a solid sort of middleweight, super middleweight. I know super middleweight isn't Canelo's natural weight division, but he's been as far as light heavyweight, so he's got that pedigree. And a lot of fighters who have fought him just say, you know, he's a very, very solid character. You're not going to walk down Canelo, and you're also in Canelo. You're fighting a guy that is an expert coming off the ring. So he has to, and we hear this phrase all the time in boxing, don't we? Be first. That's what Jaime Munguia needs to do. He needs to dare before Canelo can. And if there's any way of shocking Canelo, who's seen every style going, I think the way to do it is just to let the fireworks go early. You know, this is a man in Canelo on like 33-year-old legs. You know, he's been in a couple of wars. He's been banged about the ring a few times, you know. I don't see him get old overnight in this fight, but try and exploit the fact that he is 33 years old. He's knocking about on older legs than most of the rest of the division. You know, and you're 27 in Jaime Munguia. You've only really stepped up in the last couple of fights and really showing the world what you can do. You've had a bit of a stale career before that, so I don't think he's too shot-worn. Use every single bead of sweat that comes out of that 27-year-old body and just, yeah, again, I'll use the phrase perpetual motion. You know, I just want to see him winging in the shots, keeping it very, very close, laying on Canelo's chest if he can, not giving him enough range to allow him to just set his feet. We know he's a big hooker, isn't he, Canelo? But he can only do that if you allow him to set and you allow him time to think about his counterpunch opportunities. Jaime Munguia doesn't need to be doing that. He just needs to get in his face. And again, going back to the beginning of what I said, do what Mexicans do. There doesn't need to be style. Doesn't need to be grace. Leave that to Canelo. You're going in there to win the fight. Use your strengths. Get on his arse and try and knock him out. Try and do what nobody else has done.
It's going to be a good fight because I think Jaime Munguia will do just that, Jamie. And I think that's what makes it good in my eyes. In my head, I see this playing out like a stereotypical Mexican war. And I don't want to speak too soon of it. I don't want to go overboard with my statements. But I said this to you off the podcast and I said I'd love to see this be like, you know, another Barrera Morales. It'd be great to see it. Two Mexicans really slugging it out and going for it and back and forward. Both very skillful Mexicans. I think they're both very skillful fighters. I think, like what you've said, I totally agree with. I think if Jaime Munguia is to win this fight, yes, you're going to look at a fight with Canelo involved in where he didn't look as good. You're going to look at where he hasn't performed as well, where someone has been able to get the better of him. And there's only been two fights in his career where that's happened, of course. And that is Floyd Mayweather when he was younger in 2013. And that, obviously, was against Bivol. I think Bivol really put the blueprint into perspective of how to beat someone like a Canelo. And I think Jaime Munguia, he's got to adopt a similar approach. Obviously, Canelo is going to have learned from that Bivol fight. Obviously, he's going to adapt and he's going to try and change things up as we go through the course of the fight. But I think when you look at the premise of what Munguia's got to do, he's got to do just that. Like you've said, he's got to get close to him. He's not got to allow Canelo to try and evade anything. I think Canelo in this fight, Jamie, I think he's probably going to maybe try to counterpunch, because he is a brilliant counterpuncher. And I think he's maybe going to let Munguia come at him. But if you're Jaime Munguia, how do you counteract that? You've got to adopt a Canelo style approach to the fight. You've got to cut that ring off and not allow Canelo the space to work. Like you said, getting on his chest and not allowing him to get to the body, not allowing him to get them shots off. And even if that's a case of tying him up and spoiling his work on the inside, then that's what you've got to do to win the fight. Jaime Munguia has got to adopt an approach that he hasn't adopted before, because he is fighting arguably the best fighter on the planet and one of the best fighters of a generation. So he needs to adopt every single plan A, B, C, D, and however many plans they've got there in the game plan for backup, because he's going to bloody need it to beat Canelo. So Canelo, Jaime, from our perspective, he's a fighter who's seasoned. He's a fighter who's had well over 60 fights. He's a fighter who, you've mentioned, is 33 years old. He's been in some wars. Is he going to get old overnight? No, I don't think so. Are there going to be fragilities in him as a 33-year-old that maybe Munguia can exploit? It's possible. But with Canelo, he comes back after that Bivol loss and produces a great performance, doesn't he? And looks good. And people start to think, oh, well, it was just one of them fights where he was beaten by the better man. And that happens in boxing. Sometimes we look for excuses as to why a fighter has lost a fight. Are they getting old overnight? Do they need to retire? Is he sleeping in too many silk sheets, Canelo? I think the desire's there from Canelo. I still think it's there. He's said outright he's got intentions to stick around till he's nearly 40. Whether that happens, of course, is another thing. But I don't think he's... I've seen in him a little bit maybe at times where he's relaxed too much in the ring and he's allowed his opponent to get the better of him at times. And I think that might just be him relying a lot on his skill and ability, thinking that he'll be able to sort of push his way through these fights. I think he's learned from that Bivol loss, and he's come back and he's beat an aged Golovkin, he's beat John Ryder, and then he's beat Jermell Charlo in his last encounter. I think he's learned from all of this, and I think with someone like Munguia, who's younger, who's fresher, who is going to be natural at the weight, I think he's going to provide a different challenge for Canelo to try and overcome. I don't expect him to get old overnight. I expect him to actually come into this fight and maybe, just maybe, try and prove something to those out there that maybe doubted him and saying these things like, oh, he's getting a little bit slower, or he isn't as good as he was a couple of years ago. And yeah, he's been fighting since he was 15. He's been fighting for a long, long time. I don't see any changes in him in his last three fights that have made me think he's starting to slow or he's starting to become a worse fighter because age is getting to him. But it's going to come eventually. I'm not sure it's this fight, Jaime. I think it's going to be an interesting fight. But I want to know what your thoughts are on Canelo, because I know we've mentioned about the 33-year-old legs. Do you really think that's going to be a factor, or do you think Canelo is going to be quite shrewd and actually adopt some of the skills he might have learned from, say, the Mayweather fight in 2013 and pick his opportunities and pick his moments and change his style because he's getting older, like a lot of fighters do? A lot of the great fighters do that anyway. They change and adopt the style as they get older because the skills aren't as good as what they once were, so they adopt a different approach.
Well, I mentioned what I think Jaime Munguia should do. How I actually see the fight playing out is another matter. And I'll sort of veer towards what you said about, you know, is he going to change his style a little bit? I can see Canelo sort of trying to slow the pace down, really. And whilst Munguia, I do believe he needs to sort of bomb forward and everything like that, Canelo's quite a shrewd defensive fighter. He shouldn't be slept on when it comes to his defence. He's very good at slipping shots. He's very good at evading on the inside. So I think he's gonna slow the pace down, and I think you'll see a lot of, you know, lulling Jaime Munguia into a false sense of security, just so, because he'll be in this fight now, Canelo, knowing that he's probably the bigger puncher. He's been up at the higher weight against the more seasoned professionals, against the Dimitri Bivols of this world, you know. He was even willing, like they were talking about him going up to heavyweight at one point, weren't they, and fighting Usyk, which I think would have been a complete bloodbath, because your point before about Canelo being arguably the best fighter in the world, I think that mantle belongs to Alexander Usyk personally, and I think
if he went anywhere near him, I think we'd see it'd be like surgery, really, for Canelo. But in terms of this fight, yeah, he's had the greater experience. He's probably got the greater power. So just slow down. Slow it down. And the fact that Munguia does go at 100 miles an hour, and the fact that I'd be saying to Munguia, go in there and be 100 miles an hour, you are prone to mistakes. And this is a 27-year-old, really. If we're looking at it in the cold light of day, I've sat there and I've said what I think Munguia should do. But the reality is, he's a less experienced fighter. He's 27. It's the folly of youth, isn't it? I think he'll get overexcited. And he's shown against Nevrinchenko at times. He's prone to mistakes. And those are the mistakes you can't afford to be making against a fighter of the calibre of Saul Canelo Alvarez. Because I think that left hook's going to be waiting. He's going to be slipping shots. He's going to be a bit like a wily fox. And, you know, eventually I think he's just going to detonate. Do you know what I mean? I think we're going to see Canelo just sitting back, relaxing as much as he can, slipping and sliding for 6-7 rounds. And then I think he's going to drop the bombs, as he's done against so many other fighters. Done it against Billy Joe Saunders, didn't he? He was a very, very technical fighter, very, very capable man that I actually thought would beat Canelo. But yeah, and it didn't prove to be the case. He showed that he could take his time, and that was against an operator that you could argue was better than Jaime Munguia on paper. So against the younger man, the less experienced man, I think he's got all the tools, all the tools of the trade to really, really cause a nightmare. And whilst I am looking forward to the fight, I think Canelo wouldn't have chosen the fight unless he knew what he was doing. And I think he's just going to he's going to rely on that counter punching. He's going to slow the fight down, and we're going to see fireworks around 7 or 8. You know, when Jaime Munguia is tired out, and Canelo can just land a lovely hook, and we'll see him on his arse. But I will say, that's my prediction. I reckon Canelo 6 or 7, but we all know my fucking track record when it comes to predictions. Bet on the other guy, folks. This is probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, you've tempted fate. This is the curse of Jamie Albrecht on the BTR Boxing Podcast Network. Whatever he says in terms of his predictions, just run a fucking mile, because he ain't getting it right. And do you know what, Jamie? I'll give you some credit here, mate. It's not because of a want for being not qualified to sort of predict fights. I think you've got the knowledge, you've got the expertise to make these assessments of fights. However, I think you're just unlucky, mate. I think it's just one of them things where, you know, you'll look at it on paper, you'll look at previous fights, you'll do the assessment, you'll do the research, and then all of a sudden something will happen that's completely different. Let's be honest, who the bloody hell expected Ryan Garcia last week to be Devin Haney? Not one of us. Not one of us felt like it was going to go down. I don't think a lot of people felt like it was going to go down that way, but it bloody did, and that happens. And it can be said for other fights that we've been talking about this year, that you've been on the podcast, where it really, really is all lined up for one said fighter to get the victory, and the other fighter in the opposing corner just pulls something different that you haven't seen before, or they've stepped up to the plate finally, or they've got to a point in their career where actually, you know, they've reached the heights that we weren't expecting them to reach, or they've overachieved, and it happens. So what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is, don't be too hard on yourself. It's one of these things. It's like gambling, isn't it? It's a mug's game. It is. It's a mug's game. So, you know, I'm not claiming to be a prediction specialist. I've never been a prediction specialist, and I never will be a prediction. I know about the sport. I know the technical side of the sport, and so do you. And we can only base our opinions and our predictions based upon that, previous fights, records, and what we've seen of these fighters in the lead up to this fight. If we get it wrong, we get it wrong. We ain't specialists. You don't come here listening to us for predictions. You don't come listening for gambling tips, because we certainly can't provide them. So don't be too hard on yourself, Jamie, because I'm telling you now, it is absolutely a difficult, difficult task to try and predict. I'm not being funny, but there are pundits out there that'll sit on them panels in Sky Sports or on DAZN or ESPN or wherever is putting the fights on, and they'll sit there and they'll be adamant how a fight's going to go down, and they can absolutely get it totally wrong. And these are people that have actually been in the ring, got their experiences in the ring, been world champions, whatever it is, and they can get it wrong. It's just part and parcel of the luck of the draw, really, with some of these fights, because some of these fighters, they just either fall apart in the ring, or the fighter performs way above and beyond what you was expecting him to do. So it is what it is with that. But going back to the fight, ladies and gentlemen, let's just go back to this fight and talk a little bit about it. We've gone through a lot of details here, and we've took David's advice on board around going a little bit more into detail around the fight. So we've done that, and I think now is a good time to really talk around some of the surrounding issues, what's going on outside of the ring, and the future, really, of both of these fighters. And obviously, it is theoretical. We're talking about Canelo's future. We're talking about this Benavidez fight. Munguia, if he loses this fight, and we're going on the assumption that we think Canelo's going to win this fight, you know, it's about where he goes next as well. So it's something we can have a conversation about in the aftermath. But I think going into this fight, I think a lot of people's eyes are on the fact that they think Canelo's going to breeze past Munguia, and they're already thinking about the Benavidez fight going forward. So in theory, Jamie, if he gets a win, whether it's a stoppage later on in the fight or whether it's a comprehensive points victory and Canelo gets the win and moves forward, do we get to see the Benavidez fight next or not? Or do we end up seeing another Charlo fight, a dud fight, a one that we don't want to see? Is Canelo that in that point of his career where he's become a bit of a Mayweather, in the sense is that he's very shrewd with his business decisions, and actually if he knows he can make a shit ton of money by fighting the other Charlo brother before taking a much riskier fight against Benavidez, is he doing that? Is that the sort of business approach he's taking at the moment?
It's the Benavidez fight's dead in the water now, I think. You got a man in David Benavidez, he's 6'2". He's moving up to light heavyweight to fight Alexander Bodzidic in his next fight in June. So I just think that's dead in the water. I think he's just accepted that he's not going to be a part of the Canelo sweepstakes. Canelo, people are saying he's going to tarnish his legacy if he doesn't fight David Benavidez. I don't believe that. I think the bigger thing to tarnish his legacy was getting gifted that draw against Golovkin, and I think he lost the second Golovkin fight as well. As I always say, I think that's going to have more of an effect on Canelo's career than someone that he didn't fight. I think fighting somebody and getting gifted a very dubious decision leaves more on your legacy, more of a smear than someone you don't want to fight. And we know that Canelo, you know, although he did sort of try and fight up a light heavyweight against Kovalev, he also didn't look too great against you know, his last opponent at light heavyweight, Dmitry Bivol. You know, he didn't look especially fantastic up at light heavyweight. He hasn't got the dimensions for it. You know, eventually a fighter will go as far as they can go. David Benavidez is 6'2". You know, you could even see him going up a cruiserweight. He's absolutely massive on the night. I think that fight's dead in the water. I know I repeat myself a lot, but just to underline the point, and there's no shame in it. Personally, I think if Terence Crawford gets through his next fight against Badrinov, which there is no guarantee that he will do, then I think that's the fight you're going to see next. I think there's a bit of a blockbuster in the offing between them two. I think all the stars are aligning. You know, he's moving up slowly, and we know that Canelo isn't afraid to fight blown up light middleweights, don't we? So, well, blown up welterweights. So, yeah, that's what I expect from Canelo next. And you know what? Like, you could turn around and say, well, he's earned the right. He's had 60 odd fights. He's been the face of boxing. Let him have an easy retirement. And who's to say, really, that a fight against Terence Crawford, even though he'd be blowing himself up, do you think that'd be an easy fight, Sean? Because I don't. I think Terence Crawford's a once-in-a-generation type fighter. I do. I think he's a throwback to your to Marvin Hagler of the world. You know, people talk about Dan Aziz over these shorts just because he has like the same shorts and you know, moved a little bit like Marvin Hagler. Well, no, I think Terence Crawford, in his temperament, in the fact that he can switch it, he can punch. He's got a fucking horrible, nasty streak about him.
I think he's Hagler-esque, and Hagler would never have backed down from a fight from anyone. So I think even if Terence Crawford, if he bench Madrimov and he goes in there against Canelo, I think he'll give it 110%, and we'll have a fucking good fight there as well.
That would be a great fight, wouldn't it? I mean, let's go on to that topic, because obviously you've mentioned the Madrimov fight. That's been announced, and we can talk a little bit about that announcement, that show in general, because we've had some thoughts off the air about what we feel about that in general. So it'd be good to share it with you guys listening. But fantasy world, fantasy bookings, yeah, Canelo versus Crawford, I think is being lined up. I do think the stars are aligning. You know, you got Crawford at 36 now, Canelo at 33. Arguably in the echelons of their career now, the twilight of the career, as they like to say, and big money fights is what they're probably both looking for. Legacy fights are what they're both looking for, and I think that is, regardless of the fact that it's a big weight difference, sometimes weight differences are huge, sometimes they are absolutely farcical, some instances I just don't see the point in it. But what I will say in this instance is, it's one of those fantasy fights that happen once in a lifetime. And the amount of fantasy fights and podcasts that cover fantasy fights, it is ridiculous. So to actually get one in that sense would be really intriguing, because, yes, okay, he's slowly moving up, Crawford. He's slowly moving up towards that weight. It's obviously going to be at a catch weight, and it's going to be, because they're coming towards the end of the career, the weights are getting more difficult to make because of their age, naturally, they're progressing. So it's feasible that this can happen. It's feasible that we could get a really good fight. There are always going to be sceptics around it, and I think there will be scepticism from my part around the fact that he, you know, Crawford would be going up a couple of ways, essentially, to do this fight. However, I think both of them, with what they've done in their careers, both of them, I couldn't argue that they've got the right to dictate what fight they want and with who. So if that's a fight that happens down the line, regardless of whether Canelo beats Crawford because the weight difference makes the difference on the night, and people will say, yeah, well, he was just two weights too big. But who are we, and who is anybody in this sport to say that they shouldn't do it because of the fact that there is differences in that? Now, in some instances, Jamie, I would disagree with myself, and I'm contradicting myself, because in the past I have spoken about certain fights being made where a fighter's jumping up two weights to take that fight, and it hasn't paid dividends for certain fighters. That's different when they're in the twilight of the career, or in the peak of the career, should I say, and they're taking a big risk, a la Kell Brook versus Gennady Golovkin. That's different because that fucked up Kell Brook's career. The difference with this is you've got two guys at the back end of the career who have achieved what they wanted to achieve. They've achieved more than everybody maybe expected they would have ever have achieved in the sport, and they've created records, they've made history. Who the hell are we to say they can't have that fight? Who the hell are we to say that this shouldn't happen? Because I tell you what now, and I'm telling you, all you guys listening, that if that fight ever gets made, right, and people sit there prior to it and go, this is fucking bullshit, we shouldn't be seeing this, weight classes, blah, 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 I 110% guarantee you right at this moment in time that everybody will watch it because of the star power, because of the fact that you've got two once-in-a-generation fighters going at it. The best of the best fighting the best. Yes, weight differences, always going to be an issue. Would I sit back and watch that fight? Abso-fucking-lutely. That would be unbelievable to see that. That is something that would be like putting on a game on the PlayStation or the Xbox and pitting two of your favourite fighters in two weight categories against each other and seeing who would win. And it is kind of fantasy booking. I'd love to see it. I think it's going to happen. I do. I genuinely think that as time goes on, maybe in the next 2 years, we're going to see it. Because they're both getting to that point where that conversation's going to happen. When are they going to retire? Are they going to retire? When is it going to be? There's going to be conversations starting to arise over this next 2 years. And if I'm them, and I'm thinking from a business perspective, if promoters, managers, TV networks sit down at the table and say, do you know what, guys? this would be an epic fight for the ages. Two of the best in different weight categories fighting each other, blah, 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 blah. We're going to stick 200 million on the table, 100 million each. Are you in? Of course they're going to be in. Of course they are. No matter what we think about it, no matter what anybody thinks about it, it's going to happen. And I'd love it. I would. I'd love it. I'd be sceptical. I'm not going to lie now. I'd be sceptical. I'd have me pessimistic side of me would come out and talk about it. But as a fan, it would be unbelievable to see such an event, because that's what it'd be, Jamie, wouldn't it? It'd be an event, regardless of the weight categories, regardless of where they're at in their careers, whether they're 2 years old or whatever. It'd be a spectacle for the sport, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it certainly would. And I think when it comes to superstar status, I don't think the weights matter too much when you've got superstars like that, because the intrigue just comes from the names. I mean, we wasn't around at the time, Sean, was we? But I can't imagine there were too many detractors of Roberto Duran moving up to face the likes of Tommy Hearns and face the likes of Marvin Hagler. Certainly wouldn't have been any detractors of him moving up to welterweight when he beat Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, sometimes their names are bigger than the weights. And I agree with everything you've said there. It'd just be one of those. Everyone would watch it with intrigue, you know. Terence Crawford sits atop many people's pound-for-pound list at number one. Canelo was formerly number one in many people's eyes. Some people might still have him at number one. So there's your intrigue. There is the battle for the top of the boxing mountain, you know, a place upon Mount Rushmore of boxing. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, I think. It makes too much business sense not to. They've been speaking about it for the last 18 months. There's been rumbles, hasn't there? Particularly since Terence Crawford battered Errol Spence into submission. Personally, I'd love to see Terence Crawford fight Conor Benn next. But we know my reasons for that, because of that jumped-up, mouthy little bastard. And I won't miss an opportunity to throw his name into the mix. I'd love to see him. Find Conor Benn is a bit of a tune-up. You know, Conor Benn's shouting out, thinking that everybody can get it. We'll go in there against Big Tez Crawford and see what happens. So, yeah, nice little tune-up fight against Conor Benn. Get the juices flowing and then go in there against the ginger one, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's a fantasy fight, guys. I mean, it's one of those moments that will happen in the sport, and it will bring its critics, it will bring eyes to the sport. And do you know what, actually? Well, I'm on this subject. I would fucking rather see that. I would rather see that happen than Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. Because Jake Paul and Mike Tyson is happening. We talked about this in Shooting the Breeze a few weeks ago. The reason I'm bringing it back to the table is because we're talking about a super fight. And like you said, weight probably don't matter in a situation like this. But I read earlier today, and I know I sent you this on WhatsApp, Michael Benson, who always nicks everybody's tweets on X and then puts it out as his own, he put out there that Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson rules are confirmed. And it says, here we go, guys. This is the rules for the Jake Paul-Mike Tyson fight. Officially sanctioned professional fight. Result will go on official records. Knockouts are allowed. It's 8 by 2 minute rounds. 14-ounce gloves and no headgear. And it's July 20th at the AT&T Stadium in Texas. Right. So, if people are going to sit and tune into that to see if Jake Paul gets knocked out, and people are going to sit and watch it, and he's going to bring in big numbers, which I anticipate he will, and it's a sick, near 60-year-old man who's nowhere the fighter he once was whatsoever, and people are going to tune into that, and people are actually going to sit there and even complain about two guys and the echelons of their career going at it, fuck off. That's all I'm going to say, because you know what? You're not a real fan of this sport. At the end of the day, Canelo versus Crawford is a super fight for the ages. And do you remember back in the 80s, guys, and I'll address you with this one, Jamie, as well. Do you remember when they used to put these fights together, and doing the Legendary Night series over the years has really educated myself on a lot of these big fights and how big they really were for the time. I always remember the super fight. The super fight. Leonard versus Hagler, the super fight. They'd always call it the super fight, or the war, or the brawl to end it all, or whatever it was, whatever the tagline was back in the 80s. It was always pitting two guys against each other. And you think about it, Ray Leonard, absolute star at welterweight in the 80s. That was him. That was his forte. He goes up and fights Hagler at middleweight. in today's age, that's jumping two weights, because back then, obviously, they didn't have the division below it, which was a super welterweight division. So he jumped up two weights to fight against Marvin Hagler. That's the same, really. It's kind of, in a way, it's like Terence Crawford at welterweight jumping up to fight Canelo at a catchweight, because that's what it's going to be. So if you can accept how much of an amazing tale that was, an amazing fight that turned out to be, that didn't fucking make a difference the way. And that was a great fight. And it was a fight that's always in contention about who actually won it, even though Ray Leonard got the decision. So why the fuck would you moan about Crawford, who's arguably the best fighter out there, against Canelo, who's also been arguably the best fighter out there and one of the best of this generation? Why would you complain about that? Seriously, why would you complain? Because I ain't going to complain. It's going to have its detractors. It's going to have its critics. But it is a fight. It's our modern day super fight. And I'd love to see it. I would. I'm getting a bit excited about it now. I'm sort of talking myself into this fight when maybe a couple of years ago I wouldn't have even thought it would have happened. But actually, when we put all this on the table now and we talk about it, it's going to happen. It's great. It's a great opportunity for them both to make money at the end of their careers and go off into the sunset no matter what happens, because at the end of the day, they've both achieved some amazing feats in their careers. What else is there left for them to do in the sport? And that's the question you'd be asking yourself as a fighter. What else is there left for me to do? Take on the ultimate challenge. The ultimate challenge in this day and age is going to be someone like Crawford taking on a Canelo. So for me, that makes sense going forward. We're all going on the assumption that Canelo gets through this fight this weekend, of course, against Jaime Munguia. And you know what? We've not even given Jaime Munguia any more airtime as well. We did say about Jaime Munguia potentially losing this fight and where he would go. So I'm going to bring it back round a little bit now, getting over my excitement for a Crawford versus Canelo fight in the future. Jaime Munguia, Jamie, we think he's going to lose it, but there's a chance he might win. If he loses it, what does he do next? What's the logical thing for him to do next as a fighter if he takes the L to Canelo? Because there are other great fights for him in this division, I believe. But what can he do next?
Rematch. That's the logical thing. September rematch, two Mexicans. I know that's probably not the answer you're looking for, Sean, but it makes the most sort of fiscal, financial sense, don't it? You know, he's going to be getting paid millions for this. And then they fight on that September date and they fight again as two Mexicans. This has got the makings, if it goes the right way for Munguia, this has got the makings of a classic Mexican trilogy, hasn't it? So if he can get the win, yeah, get the fucking rematch on the table, because Canelo will be up for it. And you've got an instant rivalry there, haven't you? So that makes the most sense. I can't really see anything else at super middleweight, to be honest with you. I mean, there's fighters on the way up. There's obviously David Morrell. Benavidez has moved up to light heavyweight. And again, I was quite vociferous in the fact that I don't think he's coming down, so there's no point chasing him. Unless you want to go and fight the Morrells of this world, yeah, just get back in there with Canelo. Make the money. And, you know, you'll be sweet. You'll be sweet. I can't really, my long term sort of projection of it, I don't really know where he could go really immediately. Maybe you put me right there, Sean. I sound like a bit of an amateur because, yeah, really, without Canelo now, because he's sort of cleared up, I think if he leaves the super middleweight division, you're in the same sort of territory that Terence Crawford leaving welterweight is, or, you know, the middleweight scene, which is a bit dry at the moment now that Golovkin's disappeared and everything like that, you know, you're in a bit of a no man's land. So, I mean, he can carve it out. He can carve out his own niche at super middleweight. He can beat all comers, but I don't think there's many all comers to fight really for Munguia. So, Canelo's the only way, really.
I agree. I think there's a lot really that left to be desired in the division with some of the guys there that are, well, they're just moving on, aren't they? Or they're going and seeking other prosperous fights for themselves in the division. The David Morrell fight is a possibility for him. I mean, Christian and Billy's fighting Mark Heffron, which is a really random fight. And I think Christian and Billy would be someone that might be a potential opponent for Munguia. I mean, what's Demetrius Andre doing at the moment? Is he coming back? I mean, he's 36. He took an L, of course, in that last fight against Benavidez. And He's still showing, obviously, that he's active. He still ranks quite highly in the division. Edgar Belanger, you know, he needs a decent fight. Edgar Belanger versus David Benavidez, Munguia, should I say, is a potential fight for the future. So I think there is some of the fights there for him, Jamie, aside from pushing for a Canelo rematch. Canelo rematch really would only happen if it was a close fight and there was a little bit of controversy. Maybe the judges didn't give him, you know, say it was a wide scorecard, but it was a lot more competitive than what the scorecards reflected, then maybe there's argument for a second fight. Two Mexicans are still two selling points. There's arguments for it, but it really does depend on how the fight plays out. And I'm sure when we do the reaction show to this next week, I think that will probably give us more of an indication at that point as to where we can say Munguia will go. We're kind of talking on the basis now that he's already lost the fight, really. And that's kind of what we're predicting. You know, Canelo's going to get the win in this one. So there is options for him, but I think that's probably going to be more apparent next week when we see how this all plays out and if there's justification for a rematch. But then again, you just never know. Jaime Munguia might just go in there and bully Canelo around the ring and we could be looking like absolute idiots this time next week when we do a reaction show because we'll be thinking, oh my God, we've looked like dickheads again because we've not even considered the fact that this is potentially going to happen. So it's not a case of we don't think it's going to happen. What it is for us is a case of just really believing that Canelo's good enough and a level above Munguia as to that he's going to get this victory. So that's kind of where we see this going down on the early hours of Sunday morning. And I mentioned about some of the other fights happening as well over the weekend. I think we've got to also look at the potential of some decent fights on the undercard. Figueroa versus Magdaleno, Barrios versus Maidana, Stanionis versus Mastre. I think there's some decent fights on the undercard to definitely tune into as well this weekend. But overall, for me, this is the one that I'm looking forward to the most. And it is a double fight week because we've got Inoue versus Luis Neri coming up, but we will be covering that in a separate episode because we do want to give that a little bit more justice because Inoue is one of our favourite fighters here on the podcast. So we'll do a separate episode later this week for that. But for this Canelo fight, it probably feels a little bit like we're up Canelo's arse, but it's not a case of that, guys. It is a case of knowing how good Canelo is and feeling like he's just too good for Munguia and that Munguia's lack of big fight experience is probably what's going to see him not be able to get over the line. However, having seen Devin Haney lose to Ryan Garcia last week, anything can happen in this sport. Absolutely anything can happen. So I wouldn't rule it completely out, but both of us, Jamie, are saying that Canelo's got this and he's going to win and we're going to be looking at bigger and better fights as we've discussed in this episode. We talked about Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, did a bit of a conversation around that. Nothing else major for me this week, Jamie. Any further thoughts on the boxing sphere at this moment in time?
Well, I'll bring it back to Mike Tyson, Jake Paul. And I looked at the rules of that. They have been not announced, but, you know, we're out in the ether now. It's this 8 2-minute rounds. So really, it's not a professional fight, is it? You're still, you know, you're coining your own rules, aren't you? Mike Tyson, I mean, he still should have enough for Jake Paul. He should, let's face it. But I mean, he looks woeful against Kevin McBride, and he was 38. You know, I mean, you need boxing is a psychological sport as well. You can be as muscle bound as you want, and he did turn around and say he's not an animal anymore, and he won't disgrace the sport by losing to this level of opposition. Well, what if he loses to Jake Paul? He's turning around and saying it's professional fight. He'll go on his record. What a fucking disgrace to the sport of boxing. And the saddest thing is, it's on Netflix, and let's face it, we're all going to watch it because it's so easily accessible. It does make me heart sort of cry a little bit. But long live that Turkey El Sheikh, you know, who's bringing all the big fights to the fore, because at least we've got something to smile about. We've got a good few weeks coming up in terms of boxing, so let's keep smiling. Don't give too much coverage to that wanker Jake Paul. And let's hope that Allah, God, whatever denomination of God that you want to believe in, let's hope he's smiling down on Mike Tyson on that date and he absolutely destroys that little curly-headed wanker.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That is Jamie's thoughts on that. One thing I will pick up on, though, I said I had nothing else to mention in this episode. I forgot about the actual Crawford Madrimov card as well. I mean, a lot of people have been absolutely banging on about that, haven't they? About the fact that it's a fantastic card. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, big up to Turkey Halal Sheikh again. And yes, he is putting in some good cards on this year. I'm not going to deny that fact. But this particular card, I'm just going to quickly break it down for you guys and just see, you know, again with you, Jamie, you thought of, is it as prolific? Is it as good as what people are making out? Well, I don't think it is. So the main event is obviously Madrimov versus Terence Crawford. Terence Crawford obviously trying to get the WBO interim super welterweight title and also fighting for the WBA super welterweight title. So he's potentially making history there, of course, by getting another title in another weight category. David Morrell fighting, defending, or should I say not even defending, he's actually fighting for the vacant version of the WBA World Light Heavyweight Championship. And is that a great fight against his opponent, Kaladich? Yeah, on paper, it makes Morrell look good if he wins because he's got another title and another weight. Virgil Ortiz versus Tim Zhu, I think, is a really good fight for the card. That's one I will agree is one that does kind of whet the appetite for me personally. Isaac Cruz versus Jose Valenzuela. Andy Cruz versus Antonio Moran. And Andy Ruiz versus Jarrell Miller in a battle of who eats the most burgers before the fight. I mean, come on. Is it that good of a card, Jamie, really? Barring Madrimov and Crawford and Ortiz Jr. and Tim Zhu, everything just feels like it could just be on a normal card and not as highly touted about as a big, big card for this year.
Well, first and foremost, I think this is my main point about the card. Who keeps giving Jarrell Miller work? The man has failed drug test after drug test after drug test. Why are they still... Do you know what I mean? Like Daniel Dubois, they exposed him, didn't they? Daniel Dubois has been labelled a quitter in recent years. Not by myself, I might add, but he has been labelled a quitter in some quarters. And he managed to outgun him, managed to outlast him. He showed that he wasn't a quitter. So, and you know, then Jarrell Miller goes off and does that thing that he did regarding, was it a car? Some sort of car hire, and he ended up, there was a gun involved, I think. So, you know, he's disgraced himself out of the ring, he's disgraced himself in the ring. What value is he bringing to this card? Andy Ruiz, who seems to have just really fallen off the radar. The man was the unified heavyweight champion in the world. Surely he could fight anybody he wanted in the top 20. Jarrell Miller, just not... He's not that for me. He's just not that for me. He needs to go away, crawl under a rock, or go and sit in the local Burger King and just eat himself to death because he doesn't belong in a boxing ring. I think he's a bit of a disgrace, really. In terms of the other fights, Virgil Ortiz against Tim Zhu, that interests me. And I want to applaud Tim Zhu as well because with that horrendous cut on his head, it would have been quite easy for him to just turn around and go, oh, you know, this isn't for me, this. I'm going to take my time. I'll have a lot of time off, relax. But no, he's gone, fuck it, let's get back in the ring, let's show me metal. And he's not just fighting your average Joe, he's fighting Virgil Ortiz, who's got quite a big reputation, and he'll be a very, very big scalp for either man to take. So I think that's a great fight. Overall, the card, I think, is tainted, much like Jarrell Miller's drug record, really. I think he's tainted by his addition. I think there is absolutely no need. And the fact that, you know, Turkey Al Sheikh is involved in this, I think it leaves a bit of a sour taste. You know, you're not allowed to drink in Saudi, take drugs in Saudi, but yet they entertain the addition of a serial drugs cheat. It's a load of bollocks for me. And that puts this card down in my estimation.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's Jamie's thoughts on that particular card. I'm not struck by it. I've seen a lot of stuff on social banging on about it. I'm not buying into the same hype as others. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid that others are drinking because I see it for what it is. I strip it back and I look at two really good fights on the card. But the rest, you could see that on any normal Saturday night top rank ESPN card. And I just think to sort of label it as an amazing card is... I thought the heavyweight card last December was better than that, top to bottom. I'll be honest with you. I thought the one that they did the Day of Reckoning card was better top to bottom. That's my opinion. People might disagree with that opinion. I don't care. That's just how I feel about this card. I don't think it's good as what people are making it out to be. I think there's two good fights on it. You could say Ruiz versus Miller, but no, I'm not even going to buy into it. Everything you've said. I agree with Jamie. I just think it's two fighters, one previously a unified heavyweight champion, and the other one, just like you say, he's selling himself for work. Two irrelevant heavyweight fighters, and they've made themselves that way. They have, in different ways, they've made themselves irrelevant. I don't see the absolute value in this whatsoever. If Andy Ruiz would have been fighting somebody else on this card, maybe I would have had a different conversation, different perspective around it. But because it's Jarrell Miller, who lost his last fight against Daniel Dubois, I'm not interested. It doesn't interest me whatsoever. And I just think to myself, yes, it will be a card that I'll watch, but it might be one of them where I'll dip in and out at certain times of it because some of the fights just feel, yeah, they're okay. They look competitive on paper, but I think the reality is some of them are quite, you kind of know the results before they've even happened. And I know that's quite strange to say, but sometimes boxing can be like that. It's like watching Frank Warren's show at Your Call and knowing the lineup is Prospect versus Journeyman, 9 out of 10 fights with one main fight. And it kind of feels a little bit like that, a little bit of that vibe to me. So not overly struck by it, if I'm being honest with you. But the fights that are of interest to me, I'll certainly want to tune into. So, yeah, that's my thought on that card. And I think that's pretty much my thoughts for the week of this big fight preview, guys. So, as I said earlier, we've got a great fight happening next Monday. It is Naoya Inoue versus Luis Neri. Really good fight. Some good fights on the undercard. Looking forward to discussing that with yourself, Jamie, a little bit later this week. But this is our big fight preview for this week, covering the fight between Canelo and Jaime Munguia this coming Saturday for those in America. And for us in the UK, it's the early hours of Sunday morning. Genuinely looking forward to it. I mean, I hope it turns out to be a quite competitive fight and you know, it provides us with some good moments in it. But ultimately, we both think Canelo's got the victory here and Jaime Munguia might make a good showing. We've given our thoughts on how he could make a good showing, but again, it's putting that into practice, of course, and we'll see come early hours of Sunday morning whether he's able to do any of that and whether he's able to step up to that level. So, it is time to go through the housekeeping stuff, guys. Again, as we said at the start of the show, we spent the first 5 minutes imploring you to go and make sure you leave comments for us on Spotify in particular. It's got a great function now to leave comments on, so thank you to those that did last week. We mentioned yous at the top of the show. Continue to do that, even if it is the same individuals. Please keep doing it. It's letting others know about the show. It's giving people the opportunity who find us through Spotify to look on recent episodes and see the comments on it. Because let's be honest, if you're going on TripAdvisor and you're looking at booking a hotel somewhere, the first thing you do is you look at the reviews, don't you? You look at the reviews and see whether it's worth going to, whether it's worth staying at. So this is the same here for those that are long-time listeners that haven't yet commented. Make sure you do, because it gives people that indication of whether it's worth listening to, of course. If you don't like it, you know, by all means, put a comment there and we'll do our best to change tact, like Jamie said, and we'll try and do something to appease the masses. But generally, this is how we operate this show now, and this is how we free-flow in the episode, and I hope you're enjoying that change in tact. And I know a few of you have mentioned that specifically, so thank you for that. And those guys on Patreon.com, thank you so much to you guys as well for commenting in the past couple of weeks. It's been really, really helpful for us. Our Career Profiles show is currently running at the moment. Episode 2 has just been released, the career profile of Rocky Graziano. Last week was the career profile of Joe Lewis, so please do tune into those episodes if you haven't done so already. Next week is a new episode on the Career Profiles podcast, so please do go and tune in. We had a Legendary Nights show earlier this year. We had season 4 of Legendary Nights. It is out there in its entirety, so please do go back and listen to those episodes if you haven't done so already. But that is it for this episode. Thank you to Jamie as always, and thank you to those that have been listening and commenting. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do a BTR Boxing Pod on X or all other social media platforms out there. If you're listening to the show and you haven't subscribed to us yet, you can subscribe to us on any podcast platform. Again, if you're on Spotify, leave a comment below. If you're on Apple, leave a rating and leave a review. It really does help us. That is it for this episode. We'll be back a little bit later this week with another big fight preview. And you've been listening to the BTR Boxing Podcast Network.
The dream is made real. Ricky Hatt rocks the world.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
I wish I was 50. younger and I'd kick your ass.
It's over! Mamma mia! He's done it! Anthony Joshua defeats Vladimir Klitschko!
Let's get ready to rumble!
Sports Social Podcast Network.